tell you about Doug. So Doug was this other player on the other team, and Doug was supposedly, thank you guys, that's perfect. Doug was supposedly my age, but Doug was one of these kids, and maybe you know one of them. He was like 12, 23, I don't know, like he was growing a beard, he was like 6'4", he was like 250 pounds, he was just this giant of a kid. And I'm sure he was the right age, but he did not seem like he should have been in my grade. Just a big, big kid. And Doug could just smash the ball, just absolutely crush the ball. So he was hitting homers all the time, and one of the best baseball players in our league. And so we're playing along, and towards the end of the game, I'm just back there chilling, and Doug comes up. And coach tells everybody, back up, you know. And so we kind of back up, and I don't worry about it because I'm a left fielder. No one ever hits it to left field. He's a right-hand batter. I know where the ball's going to go. And so I'm just backing up, just acting like I could do something. And I'm standing there, and then Doug gets up to bat, big kid, and he does this crazy thing. He takes his bat, and he points it directly at me in left field.
He's like,
he's calling his shot. I'm like, come on, Doug, you're good, but you're not that good. I wasn't that worried, but I kind of was. But Doug gets up to bat, steps in, and he's swinging for the fences. So strike one comes in, he swings, he misses. Second pitch comes in, swings, he misses. And I start to think, hey, I'm okay. Nothing's going to happen. But you guys know where the story's going. I wouldn't be telling you if something didn't happen, right? So Doug, one more time, stands up. Third pitch comes in, and boom, he just pounds that ball. And it goes up. And sure enough, you guys, it was heading right towards me in left field. I couldn't believe it. So immediately I'm feeling tear, right? Because I'm definitely going to miss this ball, and everybody's going to laugh at me. But then I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, it's all right. And so I'm thinking, okay, remember what coach told you. You got to get under the ball. So I adjust myself. I get under the ball. Okay, and then you guys know, how do you catch a baseball? You got to get your one hand up with the mitt in it, right? You got to get that. And what do you do with your other hand?
You put it in
a... You support it, right? So I get my other hand up there. The ball's coming, and I'm like, I'm going to catch this ball. Doug is definitely going to be out. And so I'm out there. I'm getting down. I've got my mitt up there. And I'm waiting. And I'm waiting. And you guys, it felt like an eternity. I'm just like, what is going on? I'm like, is the ball somewhere else? Did an alien come along? Like, what is going on here? And I'm just waiting, and I'm just like, certainly something has happened. Where is the ball? I should have caught it by now. And so I made a decision. Wasn't a good decision. I'm there, and I'm like, maybe I should just look really quickly, just to see if the ball's there or not. And you guys, I swear, I moved that glove like an inch. Glance at it, and I moved that glove, and there was the ball. And so, boom, and it smacked me right in the head. And I go down on my back, I'm laying on the ground, just completely, I'm pretty sure it knocked me out, though I don't have any real recollection of it. I'm on the ground, and the next thing I remember is like my coach is coming up and other kids are coming up, like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And I start to sit up, and I feel like my head, of course, is hurting like crazy. And I reach up, and I'm like, is that the ball? Like, there's this giant lump right on the front of my head, just right there. And I'm like, whoa, that, and it's just enormous. And so I shake it off, like, okay, are you okay? And at this time, you know, we didn't really worry about concussions. It's the 80s, guys. We didn't even wear helmets, wear our seatbelts. So they're like, are you okay? You want to stay in the game? I'm like, no, I think I'll come out of the game. I've got a baseball on my head. And so they take me, and we start walking. Now, I wish that was the end of the story, but it's not. So we're walking along towards the dugout, and behind me I hear a commotion. And so I look back and I said, what's going on? And back over here where I had been laying down, the fence, like the back fence is here, and I was laying there on the ground, and the people are gathered around, and they're like arguing. And I hear my coach like, no, it went through the fence. And the other coach is like, no, it went over the fence. And they're going back and forth, no, it's... And the kids are like, no, I saw it. And finally, this little kid that's like warming up behind the fence, he has the ball in his hand, and he walks up, and he's like, This ball came over the fence. And so what you guys don't know maybe is that, and probably most people don't know this, if a ball is hit and strikes another player in the head and then goes over a fence, that's called a home run. And so not only did Doug smash my head, he also got a home run out of the whole thing. And he wouldn't have gotten it if I just stayed out of the way. I should just let it drop. But instead, I let it bounce up my head and go over the fence. And Doug took his bases and got the home run. Now, guys, I tell that story because in a very real sense, if you any of you guys that were listening this morning to my talk, you are at a time of life where it probably feels a little bit like poor Nephi when he moved that glove just a little bit. You're going into this world that is different. It's changing rapidly. There's a lot of things you probably don't know of what to do, how do you proceed in life? Like, what's the next step? I'm graduating high school. I'm leaving my family. And it's almost like this giant baseball, right? Out there just ready to clobber you. Does anybody sometimes feel like that? Like, maybe I get clobbered by the world? It's okay if you are. I still feel that way sometimes. But in a very real sense, I want to talk today about a few small things that we can do to be better prepared for that, and a few mindset things that I want you guys to be thinking about as you go out into the world. And just recognize, you guys, as you do this, small changes in your life, small mindset shifts will make a very, very big difference. Most of our lives are not dictated by any one grand, huge decision. And I really want you to pay attention to that because, listen, I think one thing that you guys are struggling with is, what is going to be my career? What am I going to do? Like, what am I going to do for work? And we'll talk a little bit more about this, but what I really want you to recognize and remember is that the decision you make right now is not going to be the decision forever. Things are going to change. So don't get totally overwhelmed. It's not these big decisions that are going to make the biggest difference in your life. It's actually the smaller decisions that will make the biggest difference in your life. The habits that you form, what you decide to do on a day-to-day basis, the kind of person you decide you want to be, whether or not you're going to be a person that exercises or not, eats healthy or not, those decisions are going to make a much bigger difference on your quality of life and what your life looks like than what career you decide to do. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's absolutely 100% true. So let's talk about one of the decisions that we can make every day. And this doesn't super fit with this topic, you guys, but I really wanted to share this with you because I think it's important. That's me playing baseball. No, that's not me, but that's a baseball player. Okay, so what this is, how many of you guys are 18? Any 18-year-olds? Okay, if you are 18 right now and you live to the age of 90, so that's 72 years. These are months, and that's how many months you have left in your life. Okay, that's the math. Each one of those rows is 36 months, which represents 3 years of your life. So every row is 3 years. That's how many you guys got left if you live till age 90. So it's 72 more years. I have far, far fewer than that. But this is your guys' life. All right? So let's talk about these dots. These dots represent months of life. Is that less or more than you guys thought there would be?
Less.
I thought it would be a lot more too. You kind of think of your life as being really long. But if we start to break this down a little bit, so let's imagine that you sleep an average number of 8 hours. That's kind of the national average. Some of you sleep more, some of you sleep less. But if you sleep 8 hours a night, then that right there is how much of your life you're going to spend sleeping. It's about 24 years of your life is going to be spent sleeping. So about 288 months. So that's not great, right? So it's like, come on, maybe I need to sleep a little less. Anybody else feel that way? All right. Work and school. So the schooling that you go to, let's imagine, you do 4 hours a day or so on average. You know, that's averaged out your entire life. Because obviously, after you retire at age 60 or something, you're probably not going to be doing work or school anymore. That life is going to be taken to work and school. It's 126 total months. Driving. Just driving to and from places. It's about half hour a day on average for the rest of your life. It's going to take up about 18 months of your life. Cooking and eating. Let's imagine you spend about an hour a day. Some of you guys might spend more, some less, but it's about 36 months. It's about 3 years of your life will go towards cooking and eating. Housework and errands.
Wow.
Another 3 years gone just by cleaning the toilets. All right? Speaking of toilets, you're going to spend about 27 months of your life in the bathroom. Not just going to the bathroom, but there's hygiene and stuff like that. That's about a little over 2 years of your life that you spent in a bathroom somewhere. All right? So if you take that, then that leaves you. So if you take out kind of those necessity of life types of things, that leaves you with 334 months of life to live, to spend how you want to spend it. This is the time that you get to go climb mountains, go camping, be with family, do all of the things that you want to do. That's how much is left. Is that more or less than you guys thought it would be?
Less.
Does it start to feel like a lot less? Okay. Let's go to the next step, though. The average, so this is a national average. The national average says that the average 16 to 18 year old spends about 8 to 8.5 hours a day on a screen. So what that looks like is that.
What?
I told you.
8 to 8.5 hours of a day of your screen time equates to about 93% of the rest of your life. 93% of your time, of your life that you have left, will be spent on screens if you're spending that kind of time on screens. Which leaves you a little bit under 2 years of actual life to live. More or less than you guys thought it would be.
Much less.
Okay. Now I would guess, I would venture, knowing many of you guys in this room, that's not what you want your life to look like. Now, I would also venture that we're probably a little bit under the average, right? Here's the easy math. If you guys want more of your life back, for every hour that you decrease that number, so if national average is 8.5 hours, if you will decrease that by 1 hour per day to 7.5 hours, it will buy you back 3 years. You get an entire row back for every hour you decrease your screen time. Every time you do that, you get more life to live. Okay? Now, let's do something together. This isn't to embarrass anybody. This is just to get a sense. Everyone pull out your phones. If you have a phone, go to your settings. For my Android users, you guys are going to be looking for, under settings, you're going to be looking for digital well-being and parental controls. And for my iPhone users, you guys are going to be using just for your screen time. There's actually a screen time setting. All right. So I'm going to brag because today I've been busy all day. I've only had an hour of screen time today, but we're not going to use that number. If you look back in my history, for the last week, I've averaged about 4 hours a day on my screen. Now I have to admit, this is just one of the screens I spend time on. So if you actually took the rest of my screens, it would be significantly higher than that. So by the way, I'm not showing you this because I'm the expert and I'm perfect at this. It's something I struggle with as well. So what I want to do, you guys, is let's just go around for a few of you. Give me your highest number in the last week. Okay? Give me your highest number in the last week. We'll just look at your week and see what it is. What's yours?
18 minutes.
18 minutes. Nice.
Today was 5.
Point two. All right. What else we got? Give me some more numbers.
An hour and 30 minutes.
An hour and 30 minutes. Nice. That's very good. What else?
An hour and 37 minutes.
An hour and 37? What else? Give me some more numbers.
7 hours and 52 minutes.
7:52. Yeah. Good job. You're right at the average. Almost 8 hours. Good job. What else? Over here.
2 hours.
Nice work. Okay, let's keep going.
You're saying most?
Yeah.
5 hours.
5 hours this week, okay? Others? I know you guys have got some over here. 1 hour?
That's my most.
What else? Do we have any others?
3 hours and 36 minutes? Anyone else brave enough to venture out and give us a number?
6 hours, but I think we need 2 hours.
Of what? Of Google Maps? So you were driving somewhere? Okay. Anyone else? All right, how many was that? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Hey, guys, that's not too bad. So we are, as a group, we're actually... Oh, shoot. We're about almost 3 hours is our average as a group. So significantly less than that. So as a group, we bought back a lot more of this time. But you guys, as you go on, the temptation is absolutely 100% out there. The world wants us on our screens all the time. That is the goal. Social media and other things that we use, the whole goal of that is to get you to look at it all the time. You cannot build a good life with just that amount of time. If you want to have a great life, you've got to control your scrolling. You've got to control those things. And I don't know what it looks like for you. I don't have the exact answer. But it's up to you to figure out, because I know that none of you guys actually want your life to look like that. Does it help when you see it visually? Remember, each hour that you decrease buys you 3 years of life over the rest of your life. It is absolutely, even if you only spend an hour, cut it in half. Get another year and a half back of your life. There's just no reason not to be trying to claw that back from this giant device monster. Okay? A couple more statistics. On average, that's the average. Most people spend most of their time watching videos. It's not TV anymore, right? It's basically, let's be honest, it's short-form video. It's TikTok, it's Reels, it's YouTube Shorts. It's those things that we flip through and scroll through. Those are what take most of our time. And here's the sad thing, you guys. I'm going to talk to your parents tomorrow about this, but that number right there just breaks my heart, because devices are one of the greatest tools we've ever been given to create, and yet we decide to sit and consume on them instead of create. And here's the crazy thing. Look how fast this is changing. In 2015, it was only 6 hours and 40 minutes. And just in those 6 years to 2021, it's increased 2 hours a day. Now, of course, COVID and things had an impact on that. But the numbers haven't gone down. They've continued to increase. All right. Let's leave that behind for a little bit. Let's tell another story. So a few years ago, I was sitting at a dinner with a really, really great orthopedic surgeon. One of the best that I know. He's a guy that lives down in Arizona. We're having dinner together. He was telling me about his family. And really great guy, loves his family, but he's a very, very busy orthopedic surgeon. This is a guy that probably clears, I would say he probably profits probably $750,000 to $1 million a year being an orthopedic surgeon. In order to do that, you guys don't understand, that means he's in surgery probably 3 or 4 days a week all day long. Like he does a lot of surgery. So very, very busy guy. We were getting together for dinner, we were just talking over a few things, and then the topic came up of like our families. He's a guy, he's a religious person, he has 7 kids, loves his family to death, and he made this comment to me. He said, Nephi, I kind of hate being an orthopedic surgeon. And I'm like, really, why is that? And he said, well, as an orthopedic surgeon, I spend so much of my time away from my family. I love to operate, I love doing what I do, but I absolutely hate the fact that I'm constantly gone away from my family. And so I said, okay, well, what would you do instead? And the picture up here is the answer. And this orthopedic surgeon, he looks at me and he dead seriously, he says, if I could do it all over again, I would be a roofer. I was like, really? And he said, absolutely. He said, I roofed in college to put myself through school, and I really liked it. I enjoyed it. And he said, I live in a very, very nice neighborhood in Phoenix, Arizona, where like movie stars and all these wealthy people live. Guess who has the biggest house in my neighborhood? I said, well, I'm guessing it was a roofer. He said, close. It's a construction guy. He owns a construction company. And that construction guy, he
is home every night. He doesn't have to do surgeries in the middle of the night. He spends a lot of time with his family. He coaches all of his kids' baseball teams. He's created a business that supports this great way of life that he has. He makes a lot of money, but he's able to be with his family. So that's interesting. And I said, well, why don't you just change? And he said, well, I should, but I'm so far down this road and I've invested so much into it, I don't know if I can. And I thought that was such a sad story. But you guys, recognize this, that just because in the future you look out and someone says, well, this is what happened to this guy. I said, how did you become, like, why did you become a surgeon? And he said, well, I was going through school and I was good at math, I was good at biology, and I was pretty good with people, and I knew I wanted to make a lot of money. And so when I told people that, good at math, good at biology, want to make a lot of money, and I'm good with people, everybody said, you should be a doctor. And so I just believed him. I should be a doctor. Let's try this ourselves. If I told you that I was really good at math, I didn't really like people that much, I had a hard time talking to people, but I like solving problems, what should I be?
Engineer,
right? I should be an engineer. Because that's what the world thinks. That's what it tells us. If I'm a person that just, I'm really outgoing, I love talking to people, and I just love convincing people of things, and I'm really good at arguing and like getting my way and making sure that things happen the way I want it to, what should I be?
A lawyer.
Lawyer or banker, that's good. Lawyer was what I was thinking, but banker is another one, right? So we have these preconceived notions about what we should do based upon our characteristics. And so often, how many of you guys heard somebody say, well, what are you going to be when you grow up? Anybody heard that before? Anybody get, like, does it drive you nuts when people ask you what you're going to be?
Yes.
Okay? Yes, it does, right? And here's what we do. We get focused on this career. We get focused on what we're going to do because we think what we're going to do is our job. And then we're like, well, if I have time, I'll have church and I'll travel a little bit and I'll have a family and all of these service opportunities and everything else. We get into this mindset, and our society very much has this mindset, is that who you are is your career, and you fit everything else in around it. It's such a disservice we do to young people, because it really does lock us into this idea that the most important thing that's going to be happening is this career. And you guys, this is 100%, 1,000% incorrect. It's the wrong question. We ask the wrong question. When we say, what are you going to do when you grow up, we shouldn't be asking about what somebody's job is going to be. There are so many jobs. And in the future, as we talk about what happens, as jobs go away, new jobs will be created, new opportunities will be created. There's going to be so many ways to support our families. And so you guys, we've got to stop asking each other, what are you going to do, meaning what is your work you're going to do? And we start with, hey, what do you dream your life will be? Like, what do you think your life will be? Do you think you'll get married? Do you think you'll have kids? Do you think you want to travel the world? Do you want to go somewhere and like do service with people? Like, what do you want your life to be? When I say, what are you going to do when you grow up? These should be the responses. I'm going to have a family. I hope to have a few kids. I hope to travel the world. This, you guys, is what a good life looks like. And then, well, maybe if I want to do all that stuff, maybe a career as a certain thing could fit into that. Maybe I could be a salesman. Maybe I could stay home and be a business person. Maybe I could be an entrepreneur. Maybe I could do a lot of different things. But there's, for every lifestyle that you desire, there's probably 100 jobs that we can talk about that would fit that and help you live that lifestyle. But we get it backwards way too often. And we focus first on career. Don't do that. As you guys think about your future, I know this career thing is just such a big, oh my gosh, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? How am I going to support my family? Just stop. Because the reality is, whatever you start doing is not what you're going to end up doing. It's really not going to matter that much. People are changing jobs, people change careers all the time, and it's okay. You don't have to be so stressed about it. Think about these things first. And the other things will fall into place. I promise you that's true. Not to say that you don't have to work for it. Not to say that you don't have to put effort in. But don't stress about the wrong things.
Stress about the right things. So the big question. To college or not to college? Anybody struggling with this one?
Yes.
Okay, a little bit?
It really is. When I was growing up, the obvious answer, if you wanted to be successful in life, if you wanted to get ahead in life, all of us were told the obvious answer was you go to college. You work really hard, you get good grades, and when you're finished, you go on and you go to college. And if you'll do that, then you'll have a good life. And that was what we were sold on. And for many of us, that was very true. Because you could, at that time, get a good college degree, get a good job, and support your family, and have success. It's not holding up as well as it used to. So let's just look at the data. Oh, it's going to be hard to see the data. Let me walk up here so I can show this to you guys a little bit. So first of all, the question of, will I make more money with a college degree than not a college degree? Pretty much all the data from the past says that yes. So along the bottom of this graph, you guys, these are people born in the 1910s, 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, and 1980s. So I was born in 1980. This is kind of my group. This is the only data we have because it's the only people old enough to actually have data on them, right? Like, I couldn't do this graph with you guys because what this is representing is this is our lifetime expected wealth. How much benefit do we get from going to college? So you see the people born in the 1910s that got a graduate degree had some pretty good benefit, like over 400% more wealth in their life than someone who didn't. Same thing over there for people that just got regular degrees, lots of benefit. But do you guys notice something happening as the years go on? What they found in this study, this was actually done by the government. It wasn't the government. It was the St. Louis Federal Reserve, which is a large organization, and their study on the benefit of degrees. This is 1980, so the years I was born, my generation. That red line is 0% benefit on wealth. Same thing over there. So that I misspoke. These are both postgraduate. That's for white families, and this is for black postgraduates. There is no statistical benefit in lifetime wealth and how much money you earn over your life to going and getting a degree and not getting a degree. Okay? Now, here's the caveat to this data and what you have to understand. They have the same graphs on how much people earn, their income. There is benefit in your income from getting a degree compared to not getting a degree. So how is that possible? Can you guys tell me, if I make more money, how is it possible that I don't have more wealth?
Wealth isn't money. How are you spending that money? What are you doing with it? What are the other things you're doing with your life, right?
Okay, that's a big part of it.
It's debt. I remember went to school.
Yep.
You're still in debt.
It's debt. It's the debt that we take on to go and get these degrees. And so the debt is what causes, even if I make more money for the rest of my life, because of that debt that I incurred going to school, my lifetime earnings and my wealth has no statistical benefit. Now, this is true of bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, PhDs, medical degrees, law degrees. It doesn't matter. This statistic holds in all of those different categories. Okay? So what that means is, as far as our lifetime wealth, the debt that we incur when we go to school makes a big difference on our lifetime wealth, how much money we have throughout the rest of our life. If we go and get a degree, we don't take on the debt, it will bump up our earnings. It will bump up how much money we make. And if we don't take on debt, then our lifetime wealth will be higher. So my first comment on college is this. If you decide that you do want to go and do something, a college degree. If you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a nurse, those types of things require a higher education. You have to go to college to do those things, which is totally fine. But do everything you possibly can to avoid the debt. You don't need to go to Harvard to study liberal arts. Right? That's $40,000 a year, and the liberal arts degree may not pay you back on that. I would not go into debt to become a lawyer right now. That's probably not a good place to be. I would avoid debt as much as I possibly could. So how do we do that? We have scholarships. There are need-based help. So if we have, if our family doesn't make a lot of money, the government will help with some of those costs. There is work. There's jobs. That's still a viable option, especially with some of the universities around here. Like the BYU systems are relatively. So when I was in school, how many years ago? Was it 20 years ago? 20 years ago. At Utah State, I think I spent $1,800 a semester to go to Utah State. And now here we are, all of those years later, BYU is still only $2,400 a semester. So it really hasn't increased that much. Utah State, on the other hand, is more like $7,000 a semester. So it's really shot up. So there are options. There's other things, there's other programs that you can take advantage of to try to go to school without debt. So that's what I would say first. If you're going to go to school, have a very specific reason. What are you wanting to study? Why are you wanting to study it? And go and do that thing without incurring debt. On the flip side of that coin, though, I think a lot of people go to school because it's the in vogue or it's the popular thing to do. My friends are going to school. My grandpa thinks I'm dumb if I don't go to college. Anybody had that conversation with grandpa? Yeah, so it happens sometimes. It's like, well, you're not smarter? Like, no, grandpa, I just don't want to go to school. So don't go to school to appease someone else. Don't go to school because you think it's fun or you might have a great time. There's lots of great ways to move out of your house and go on and do things with great people. You can go and get a job in one of these college towns, live in an apartment, have that same college experience, but without incurring debt that you don't need and wasting your time doing something that's not going to benefit you. Okay? And here's the other thing to know. Most large employers, people like Facebook and Google in the tech space, but even in the medical space and other industries, most of them have removed the requirement for people to have college degrees to get into their organizations. It used to be that you couldn't even dream of working in those places without a college degree. They've removed many of those things. Many employers are now hiring without a college degree. What they expect is competence, which is really great, right? Because we can gain competence in a lot of different ways. So to college or not to college, it's still 100% your decision. Take what I said into consideration. And here's the last thing I would say. Regardless of whether you go to college or don't go to college, you absolutely must educate yourself. You will not find success unless you're educating yourself. That education could look, there's a lot of ways you could educate yourself. You can go to college, you could go to vocational school, you could become an electrician and become an apprentice and eventually a journeyman. There's lots of things you can do that. You can go and start businesses and just learn through failure. There's all kinds of ways to educate yourself. You can study the stock market and become a trader. So many ways to do this, but you have to educate yourself in some way. Education doesn't go away just because we don't go to college. People that don't educate themselves end up doing hard labor, like they do physical labor for the rest of their life. And you don't necessarily want to be in that because that's another space that's probably going to be taken over eventually by robotics. Because it's really easy. If you don't have to think, all you have to do is swing a hammer. That's easy for a robot to program a robot to do that. Okay? Questions about that? Any questions, concerns, comments? Okay. I am just such a great teacher. It's done. All right. This is not my first motorcycle, but my first motorcycle was an RM 370. It was blue. It looked a lot like that. In fact, it was in 1978. It was a lot like that, except that yellow tank was blue because I'd taken it off, I'd sanded it down, and I'd painted it blue myself because I thought it looked a lot cooler. When I was 12, I decided that I wanted I'd been riding my dad's small 125 motorcycle. It looked a lot like that, but a little smaller, for a lot of years. So when I was 12, I decided, man, I really want to buy a motorcycle. So I started saving up my money and started kind of getting ready. By about the time I was 14, I'd spent all that money. And my dad said, you know what? You really want a bike. I want to go riding with you. Let's let's find you a bike. I'll pay half, he said, and then you pay the other half, and then you can pay me back the half that I paid for it. So I found a 1978 Suzuki RM370 for, I think it was $600 somewhere, and I bought it, and it was a big bike, you guys. These old bikes are super, super heavy. Like, they're not like the light bikes that we have now. And so I was so excited to ride it, and I started riding it around, and I wasn't a great rider yet. I'd just been riding this flip bike on my dad's once in a while, and this was a big, powerful bike. I mean, you throttle the thing, and it would stand right up and throw you off the back. And so I was a little bit scared, to be honest, but I loved just that exhilaration of riding my motorcycle. So one day, my friends, who were much, much, much better riders than I was, they had one of them had a three-wheeler and a four-wheeler, and then there was another motorcyclist, and they'd been riding for years together up in the hills where I lived. They're like, "Hey, Nephi, let's go riding." I was like, "This is it. This is the day. I'm going to go with my friends and go riding." And they were good riders, and I was super excited to show them how awesome I was on the 370. So I jump on, we get it started. They all come to my house because it's kind of near where we were going to ride. And we jump on, everyone's excited. We did wear helmets when we rode on the motorcycle. So I didn't, it's not that I never wore a helmet. So I put my helmet on, got ready, and we start taking off. So my road, I lived like off of this, there was a paved road, and then I was about a half mile off of that. And we were going to go down to the paved road, go up the paved road a little bit, and go up on the hills. And so they get on, I get on, we take off, and we're heading down my dirt road towards the paved road. And these guys, I could not believe how slow I was. They just took off like so fast, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I was like, I got to keep up. I can't be the wimp. And so I throttle up, and we just fly down this dirt road in front of my house. We get all the way, and they turn, and they get onto the paved road, and they start heading up. And so I, wanting to keep up with them, kept my speed up. And I'm like, I'll just turn this corner. And so I was just, and I'm flying along, and realized too late that I was a total idiot, and that I was not going to be able to just turn that corner. And so I get scared, and I lock up my brakes, and right when I lock up my brakes, I transition from the place where it goes from like hard-packed dirt to some gravel before we get onto the paved road. So I slam the brake, hit the gravel, and it's like I'm on ice, you guys. The bike goes whoop, straight down on its side. I go right down with it, and now I'm sliding like for a long, long, long ways. I go up off the gravel, over the pavement, so I'm scraping along the pavement, but bouncing as I go, and then I start to get really worried because on the other side, just a short distance, there's a barbed wire fence. And so I know that if I slide into that barbed wire fence, it's going to be bad news. And so I'm just trying everything I do. I kind of push the bike away. I'm scraping my arms along the ground. And I'm able to like dig my heels in just a little bit and get myself to stop as my bike smashes into the barbed wire. I get myself stopped, and I didn't end up wrapped up in barbed wire. And I'm just laying there like, what just happened? Like, how in the world did all of that happen so fast? It felt really slow while it was happening, but like the dust was everywhere, and it was carnage. So I'm laying there. My friends come back. They pick me up, and by the looks on their faces, I knew it was bad. My face was like road rash. My arm from here to here was just like pure road rash. Down my ankles, just everywhere. It tore my pants completely. And they pick me up, and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I think I'm going to go home." They're like, "Are you sure you're okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, you guys go ahead. I'm going to go home." And so they help me pick my bike up, and I get it started, and kind of bleeding out the side, I drive back to my house and put my bike away. And, of course, I didn't want to tell my parents, and so I put some long sleeve shirt on, put my pants on, took the pants. But eventually my mom found the pants that were all torn up, and she's like, "What happened?" And so I had to explain the story to her. But you guys, that was a painful experience. That was not fun. And it took a long time for all that road rash to heal. But I can look at certain parts of my arm and down on my knee. I've still got some really awesome scars. Some really awesome scars. And I have this really crazy cool story to tell you guys today. And you guys, as you go out into the world, there is a tendency to be a little bit afraid. There's a tendency to be like, I don't know if I want to try. We have a fear of failure, which is natural. We all have it. But you guys, let me say this. A life without a few scars, without a few crazy crashes, without some big failures, is kind of a boring and almost pointless life. I'm not telling you guys all to go crash on a motorcycle. Yeah. Please don't tell your parents that, because I didn't say that. But I am saying, you got to get out there. You got to do some things that are going to push you. You got to do some things that maybe you will fall and hurt yourself just a little bit. Maybe you do need to climb up a rock and slip off and slam into the wall as you get caught on the way down. Maybe you do need to, you know what I'm saying? Great lives are built on great experiences, great opportunities. And it's kind of boring if you just sit back. If I went back to that other graph, the world that you're growing up in is a world that very much wants you to sit on your butt with a screen in front of you, and all of your adventures happen in some other world. You guys, it is super scary what's coming with AI. It's not just the fact that they're taking jobs. They're going to be able to very soon curate experiences to you guys. What I mean by that is, has anybody seen like a movie where they have a virtual world and people live in that virtual world full time? There's several movies out there now, like Ready Player One and others. That's what's coming. That is not far-fetched. You are going to live in a time where there will be an entire other world where you can go into, and the AI can put people in front of you that seem real, but they're going to be completely curated and made just for you. They're going to be funny in a way that you find to be funny. They're going to be adventurous in a way that you think is adventurous. They're going to be good-looking in a way that you think they're a person is good-looking. Like, they will create these things through AI to 100% cater to you. And they will connect that with sensitive materials, with haptics, so that if someone touches you in that world, you feel it in the real world. Like, that is a very, very real thing that is coming. That is not the stuff of science fiction. We are probably just a few years away from that. And let me tell you, when we start talking about that technology combined with pornography, oh my gosh, entire classroom just about that. But that's the thing, that's the temptation that you guys are going to be facing. That's the world, that's what the world wants you to do. Because if these big corporations can get you inside of that world constantly, then they can sell you anything that they want. Facebook lets you use Facebook for free, not because they are charitable, good people. They let you use Facebook for free because you are the product they're selling. If they can get 8.5 hours of your time, they turn around to the advertisers and say, for this person, I'm giving you 8.5 hours of their consciousness, of their awareness, of their eyes, you've got to pay me this much money. They get paid based upon how much time they can get you to spend in those places. And so when we get into these hyper-realistic virtual worlds, holy smokes, you guys, it's going to be insanely addictive. It's going to be incredibly hard to resist. And it's all going to be so that someone else is making money off of your life. That is not the kind of life you want to be living. That is not a good life. It's going to be very hard to actually contribute and do anything in the world because it's going to be so tempting to just sit and let AI show me and give me exactly what I want because I think I want it. That's a scary world, but it's coming. And so, while I'm not telling you to go crash a motorcycle, maybe go crash a motorcycle. Maybe get out and do some things. What happens after high school, you guys, is you have a life. A life to live, an amazing life to live. Fill it with adventure and excitement and things that you want to do. Go live in England for 6 months. Go travel the world. Go down to Guatemala and help some, work in an orphanage, live in an orphanage for a while. Whatever it is, but just go live a good life. Because the alternative is just not great. How much time do we have? Like 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys, just not enough time. All right, let's talk about this for a few minutes. Let's talk about money for just a few minutes. In most of our lives, for most people, in order to make more money in our lives, if you work for someone else, if you go to a job every single day, you get paid for the time that you put in and the production that you do for that company, whoever it is that you work for. And so if I like my example, my friend that was a doctor, he would say, if I want to make more money, I have to go and do more surgery. We call that a time for money transaction. I give you my time and you pay me money. Most people in the world have jobs that do that. I would say 95% of the world trade their time for money. But guys, that's not a great transaction. The most valuable thing that you have in your life is time. It's not money. It's not some skill set. It's not. It's the time that you have. And the older you get, the more you're going to recognize that you want to have control over that time. You want to be able to use your time in the way that you want to use it. And if you are chained to a job for your entire life, working for someone else, exchanging time for money, then you're never going to be able to break away and do the things that you actually want to do. It's hard to go live in Guatemala if you have to put in all of your time every single day for some employer. Now, this is not me saying don't go get jobs. In fact, it's quite the opposite. We need to re-enshrine work as an important thing. The world right now says we don't want to work, right? What do we want to do? We want to be YouTubers. We want to be influencers because you don't have to work if you're an influencer. Well, guess what? The top influencers, they work really, really hard, actually. We think that we don't need to work in the world that's coming, but that's the opposite. And if we allow it, then what the world will do and what these corporations will do, and I'm not anti-corporation, by the way, guys, it's just that I know what they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to accomplish they're trying to make money, and they'll do that off of our backs. If they can get to a point where you just live in a virtual world and you don't do any work, that's fine by them because they will profit from that every single second. But here's the problem. When we don't work, there's actually studies on this. They tracked people that as they went through their lives, when they retired. So retirement, most of us think of retirement sometime, somewhere in the 60s, in our 60s or 70s. They compared people that retired when they were like 65 with those who didn't retire and worked until they were 70 or 80. And what they found was this. People that retired died 3 years earlier than those who didn't. Because people stopped having a purpose. Work gives us purpose. It allows us. Now, what I want to be clear about is we can do work in a lot of different ways. It doesn't mean we have to go give our time to someone else to make money. We can work in a lot of different ways. But work is important. But what we don't want to do is we don't want to spend the rest of our lives working for someone else, giving them our time so that they give us money back. And so we have to create leverage. Has anybody ever picked up something huge with a board when you stand on the end of it? It's really actually pretty fun. Like, leverage is super, super fun. A few years ago, I did a class where I stood on one end of a board, and there was like a block in the middle. And I had this little tiny kid come up. And it was a pretty long board and a good fulcrum. I had this little tiny kid come up on the other end, and I'm 200 pounds, and this kid probably weighed like 50 pounds soaking wet. And so I was like, hey, push on that end of the board. And I stood on this end of the board, and he went over there, and he pushed on it, and he lifted me straight up off the ground. And he didn't even have to push very hard. He just pushed down on the board, and up I went. Leverage is something that's awesome in the physical world. Leverage is also something awesome in the financial world. What guys need to be doing and your finances, and with what you're trying to accomplish with your investments and other things, you need to create some system that is going to give you leverage. What does that mean? It means that you need to create something that makes money without you having to put time into it. So what could that look like? It could look like business. It could look like entrepreneurship. It could look like buying real estate, rentals. It could look like buying other asset classes, such as oil and gas, mining shares. There's all kinds of assets out there, you guys, that if you buy them once, and they continue to give returns over a period of time. That is the goal that all of us should have. Now, that's a very, very broad financial goal. I understand that. But it's the only financial goal that's going to make sense. If we had more time, I would explain that a little bit more. But just trust me when I say, you want to create systems of leverage with your finances. Something where you can buy an asset or buy a business or start a business and build that to a point where it doesn't require you to spend all of your time trading for money. When you go to bed at night, your business still makes money. When you go to bed at night, your real estate still makes money. That's the kind of system, financial system, that you want to build. So how do you do that? Well, here's the number one thing. For the next 10 years of your life, work really, 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 really hard. And make as much money as you possibly can. And save that money. Not to go and spend... You're not saving money for retirement. You're not saving money so that when you're 65, you can use that money to live. You're trying to build up what's called capital. Is everybody familiar with the term capital? Capital is the money that we have to go out and do something, some sort of an investment or some sort of a start of business. So let me give you an example. I go to school. So one of you guys goes to school. You get a degree. You go get a job doing something. And you make money, and you take a large portion of what you make and you set it aside. You don't go out and buy a fancy car, because that's just a waste of your capital. If you go and buy a fancy car, you take, you know, that money that you've been saving, you go buy a fancy car, well, now you don't have capital. You go buy, you don't necessarily even need to go buy a house for a little while. You need to focus on building capital. That capital then, if you save over a period of time, let's say it's $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000, you can then take that capital and you can go down the street and you can buy an apartment, maybe a duplex or a fourplex, that you live in one of the places and you rent the other ones out, and then you start building, they start paying you money on a monthly basis. So you've turned $50,000 into maybe a stream of $2,000 to $3,000 every single month. Now that $2,000 to $3,000 every month can be saved to create more capital so that you can then go and buy another one. And in that way, you can build this system of leverage. So here's the, I know that's a lot of stuff and you guys are kind of like, I don't know what you're talking about, Nephi. Let me just break it down and give you two simple things to go by. Number one, work really, really hard in your 20s and get as much savings and capital as you possibly can. Number two, take that capital and use it to buy something that will give you money on a regular basis. And do not use that money on wasteful things. Every time in the next few years of your life, every time you go down and buy Chick-fil-A, that's another hour or two of your life you're going to have to give up in order to build capital to build this type of a system. Every time you go and go skiing, it's another thing. That's another couple of days you're going to have to work in order to build the capital that you need. Now, please listen to this. I'm not saying never do any of those things. But I am saying you've got to do it in a methodical and think about it in these terms. Is going skiing worth 2 days of my life to build the capital that I need to build this system? And if you'll do that, you'll make better financial choices about what you're doing. Oh, guys, there's so much to tell you, but thank you guys so much for listening. Let me just finish with this. I know that you are, I know that you're worried about what's next. It's fine. It's okay to be worried. It is crazy. I think even as parents, we're kind of like, we don't know what it looks like. But I so much want you guys to be excited about it. You are growing up in probably the very best time in human existence. You're going to grow up in a world where we may go from everything that we do has to be done by humans to maybe most things that get done are done by robots. And you get to be part of that. You get to be a piece of that. You get to be the ones that decide, hey, I'm going to use a robot to do this thing and to create value and to help people. You guys may be part of the generation that figures out how to eradicate hunger throughout the world because we create enough abundance throughout everything that there is no hunger. You may be part of the generation that figures out how to do education the right way. You may be part of the generation that solves a lot of the problems that this world has, because that's what's getting handed to you, the technology and the ability to do those things. It should be super exciting, because you guys are growing up at an awesome time. I know we talk about as parents so often how challenging it is and how unique it is and all of those things, and that's all true, but it's also the very, very best time to possibly be alive. If you guys will take advantage of that, be excited, have hope, and go out and do the hard things, you will be the ones that change the world. You will be the ones that solve those things. And that's pretty awesome. Thank you, guys.
Remember the musical showcase and the dance tonight? It'll be a lot of fun.